officials have said will remain based in suburban Phoenix, will take on the U.S. Airways name. The deal would give America West access to U.S. Airways' complex web of East Coast and international routes, as well as its airplanes, but U.S. Airways' debt would come along too. Leaders of both carriers have said the deal makes sense because it would result in a stronger carrier, capable of more quickly paying back federal loans that were made to both airlines following the 2001 terrorist attacks. To close the deal by fall, the airlines must still stave off any rival bids. For NPR News, I'm Mark Moran in Phoenix.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has urged residents to conserve energy this summer so there isn't a repeat of the power crisis of 2000 and 2001. There were rolling blackouts then after the state moved into deregulated energy markets. Schwarzenegger also set out an electricity plan that would include creation of a state energy agency. He said he wants to increase California's energy efficiency by 20% by 2010. His plan would let large businesses choose their electricity supplier, and it would encourage technology to help lower power demand during peak hours. But the legislature's legal counsel has said some parts of Schwarzenegger's plan are unconstitutional. In particular, it says the authority of a state energy agency could infringe on that of the state Public Utilities Commission. Aluminum manufacturer Alcoa says it is cutting 6,500 jobs. Catherine Fink of member station WDUQ reports from Pittsburgh.
The cuts amount to 5% of Alcoa's workforce. The Pittsburgh-based company will eliminate jobs in 121 locations around the world. More than half of the positions are in the company's automotive businesses. A spokesman says Alcoa is responding to declining demand from North American auto manufacturers. One plant in Kentucky will close and others will be consolidated. An aluminum smelter in Germany will shut down due to high energy prices. Alcoa says the cuts are part of a 12-month-long restructuring effort that will save $150 million a year. The cuts come just a few months after Alcoa eliminated another 1,800 jobs. For NPR News, I'm Catherine Fink in Pittsburgh.
The new World Bank president, Paul Wolfowitz, has encouraged business leaders to seek out and expand opportunities in Africa. He told a meeting of American and African business leaders in Baltimore that Africa is trying to turn a corner on development and that a flourishing private sector is critical to that process. Wolfowitz told the U.S.-Africa Business Summit that countries that have developed successfully have created strong private sectors. He just returned from a four-nation trip to Africa. British Airways says it is going to increase its fuel surcharge on tickets issued in Britain because of continuing high oil prices. The long-haul surcharge will rise to $44 from its current $29, and there will be a short-haul surcharge increase as well. BA says it's considering what to do in other markets. I'm Paul Brown, NPR News, Washington.
And you're listening to Morning Edition on AM 580 WILL, Urbana. Today in Urbana, we expect a mostly sunny day. It will be hot, more humid, with a high of 95 degrees, and the possibility of a heat index this afternoon around 100. Partly cloudy, muggy tonight, low around 70, and tomorrow partly to mostly sunny, again hot and humid, with a slight chance for a passing thunderstorm, the high 94. Right now, the temperature in Urbana is 85 degrees at 10:10.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.
Can you give us your assessment of the strength of the insurgency? Is it less strong, more strong, about the same strength as it was 6 months ago?
That question was posed by Democratic Senator Carl Levin at a hearing yesterday. Levin spoke at a time of growing debate over the war in Iraq. In recent weeks, Vice President Cheney said the insurgency was in its last throes. Then a leading Republican senator, Chuck Hagel, said the U.S. was losing and the administration was disconnected from reality. Yesterday's question about progress against the insurgency drew this response from General John Abizaid.
In terms of comparison from 6 months ago, in terms of foreign fighters, I believe there are more foreign fighters coming into Iraq than there were 6 months ago. In terms of the overall strength of the insurgency, I'd say it's about the same as it was.
So you wouldn't agree with the statement that it's in its last throes?
I don't know that I would make any comment about that other than to say there's a lot of work to be done against the insurgency.
This morning we're going to get a progress report of sorts on the Iraqi insurgency and the way it's evolving. This week, Army Lieutenant General John Vines gave Pentagon reporters his forecast for the coming months.
I'm assuming that the insurgency will remain at about its current level. What we see in terms of numbers of attacks, what we see in numbers of tips, what we see in the flow of foreign fighters, which is quite small, it is relatively static. It's not growing, not spreading.
We've reached General John Vines in Baghdad. General, welcome to the program.
It is good to be back with you, Steve. Thank you.
General, what does it mean when you say the insurgents are not getting weaker and that you don't expect they will get weaker soon? What are the implications of that?
The elections are currently scheduled for 15 October.
This is on the Constitution.
The constitutional referendum. And that's only about 4 months away. We don't think that the size of the insurgency will change significantly, either smaller or larger during that period of time. We believe that the insurgents in the country will do everything they can to prevent the elections from taking place on schedule, but that doesn't mean that the size fundamentally changes.
What does that mean for U.S. troop strength in the country over the coming months?
Well, of course, it will be conditions-based. At this point, I would not recommend a drawdown prior to the election. The Iraqi security forces are making good progress, and I believe that following the elections, based on the capacity of the Iraqi security forces, that we may be in a position we can draw down.
Following the elections, a week, a month, a year?
No, I mean fairly soon thereafter. There are some units that are scheduled to rotate after the elections, and depending on the conditions and what we see during the period leading up to it and during the elections, we may recommend that some of those units not be replaced.
At the beginning of this week on Monday, we read about an attack on a police station in Baghdad, which seemed particularly complex and sophisticated. I'm looking at an account from Tom Lassiter, a reporter with Knight Ridder Newspapers in Baghdad, describing how insurgents attacked a police station with rocket-propelled grenades, mortars, and heavy machine gun fire before detonating a car bomb. And when police started to venture out after that first blast, a second car bomb exploded. That sounds like a fairly sophisticated attack.
There is no question about it. The technical and tactical skill of the insurgents is increasing. That doesn't mean they're getting greater in number. Most of their tactics, however, amount to slaughter. They blow themselves up and kill dozens of civilians, in some cases Iraqi security forces, in some cases coalition forces. They, in some cases, have remote control detonators so someone else can detonate them in case the suicide bomber loses their nerve. But the primary method of attack has been improvised explosive devices, and certainly they can be used to support attacks like you described on the police station.
Mm-hmm.
They are capable of doing that. They're not capable of doing it probably right now in large numbers and in many different locations, but they have the capacity to put an attack like that together, to be sure.
We've been listening to Lieutenant General John Vines. He's one of the senior U.S. military officers in Baghdad. We asked Jeffrey White to listen in to our conversation with General Vines. He is a former head of Middle East Intelligence for the Defense Intelligence Agency at the Pentagon. He's now with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Welcome.
Thank you.
What did you make of what General Vines said as he described the insurgency?
It raised some questions in my mind, including what's the definition of the size of the insurgency, which the general believes is essentially going to be static over the next few months, but they have this capacity to surge, and I expect that they're going to surge for the referendum, and especially we'll see it in Sunni areas.
What do you make of this detail that, according to the U.S. military, the insurgents are being paid?
Well, that doesn't surprise me any. Actually, the numbers or the cost of the incident seems to be dropping, which to me means that the risk associated with it is also declining.
What are the numbers?
They're talking now like $125, $150 for planting a bomb. So
what did it used to be?
It was somewhere around $500. There have been reports of $2,500 for different kinds of attacks. But it also it doesn't capture the essence of the insurgency in my mind. There's a core of fighters, of people involved in the insurgency who are clearly skilled. They carry out complex types of attacks. And I doubt if they're being paid $125 and just swept in off the street to do those kinds of actions. Those are dedicated people.
Richard Armitage, the former Deputy Secretary of State, spoke to us just before he left office earlier this year and said that, as he views it, the U.S. enemies need American troops to stay in Iraq, by which he meant that U.S. troops become a unifying factor for the insurgents. They become a target for the insurgents. They delegitimize the Iraqi government and so forth. Does that problem get worse over time?
I think over time, the insurgency has moved from mostly resistance against occupation to increasingly an insurgency against the transforming Iraqi government. And regardless of whether or not we were in country, the insurgents would be attacking the Iraqi government that is coming into being, the political process, and so on.
President Bush has said that U.S. troops need to stay in Iraq until Iraq is secure. Military officials have said that means training Iraqi forces to take care of themselves. Are there other factors that come into play as the U.S. military and their civilian leaders consider how long U.S. troops can stay in Iraq?
Well, I think there's some important issues about the ability of the Army and the Marine Corps providing the ground forces in Iraq to sustain an insurgency over a long period of time. People are saying it's 7 to 13 year effort to control an insurgency. The repeated rotation of units back into Iraq is causing, I think, a lot of stress on the military.
Jeffrey White is a former head of Middle East Intelligence for the Defense Intelligence Agency. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The debate over progress in the war comes at a time when Iraq's new prime minister is visiting Washington. Ibrahim al-Jafri heads a government that is trying to draft a new constitution. Yesterday, he traveled to the National Archives, and in a cavernous, dim hall, he inspected the American Constitution. Through an interpreter, he spoke of the cost of the war in Iraq.
We acknowledge that the blood of your sons have mixed with the blood of our sons and paid a very high price.
In visiting the United States, Jafri is examining an important front in his country's conflict. Public opinion surveys show that American doubts about the war are growing. Listening to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Support for today's broadcast is provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 15 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of cheeses, olive oil, balsamic vinegar, spices, chocolates, cookies, and more. Catering services are also available. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
And in just a moment, we'll be going to National Public Radio for live coverage of a presidential press conference. President Bush talking today in Washington with the Prime Minister of Iraq, Ibrahim Jafari. They will no doubt begin with comments on their assessment of what's going on these days in Iraq, and we'll be taking questions from reporters. And again, that's coming up in just a moment. Hour number two, we'll be talking with a journalist from Russia. She teaches at Moscow State University, Nadia Ajgikina. She's here visiting the campus for a conference looking at women and their role in Russia today and how that has changed and perhaps not. We'll have more on that in the second part of the show. It's 10:20.
From NPR News in Washington, this is special coverage of a joint news conference by President George Bush and visiting Iraqi President and Prime Minister Ibrahim Jafri. I'm Frank Stasio. Jafri's visit to the U.S. comes amid growing criticism of the administration's Iraq policy. Yesterday, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld came under sharp attack during testimony to the Senate Armed Services Committee. Democrats and Republicans are calling for an end to the U.S. military presence in Iraq. Meanwhile, polls show declining public support for the president's war policy. Joining me now are NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins and NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne. Don, what's the significance of the timing of Jafri's visit?
Well, there are a couple of reasons why the timing of this is significant. First, everything you just mentioned. Polls are falling. Public support for the war in America is falling, according to a growing list of polls. And they really do need to try to shore up that important constituency. But the stated reason for this visit now is that next week we have the first anniversary of the Iraqi sovereignty. And the president will be rolling out a number of speeches and appearances over the next couple of weeks, including a big speech, we're told, at Fort Bragg in North Carolina in primetime next Tuesday night to mark that anniversary. But this is all part of that. But don't underestimate the attempts at kind of turning public opinion.
And Lauren Jenkins, 1 year in, 1 year after a sovereignty has been achieved in Iraq, the administration continues to paint a rosy picture of the situation. Vice President Cheney says the insurgency is in its death throes. How does that square with the situation in Iraq?
Well, there seems to be some sort of disconnect between what the administration is saying and what people on the ground are saying, including the American military commanders. Just days after Vice President said the insurgency was in its death throes, his own general, chief commander, General Abu Zaid, testified 2 days ago, yesterday, in front of Congress, saying that the insurgency is as strong as ever and may even be growing. There are certainly more foreign fighters are coming across the borders.
Prime Minister Jafari was talking to editors at the Washington Post yesterday, said, look, things are getting better. There are fewer car bombings. We're down from 14 a day to one a day.
I don't know what he's talking about. The reports from our own military said that last month there were at least 700 car bombs. They killed 33 Americans were killed. Just since Jafari's been in power in the last 2 months, there have been something like 1,200 Iraqis killed. This insurgency is stronger than it's ever been by all the statistics that are being measured by Americans on the ground.
What do you make of the CIA report that, in fact, Iraq is becoming a real training ground and hotbed for a much more sophisticated kind of terrorist activity?
Well, that's interesting. You know, one of the excuses for going into this war was that it had that Saddam Hussein was connected to al-Qaeda and all of that. Even though that's been disproved, it seems that 2 years into U.S. occupation and fighting an insurgency, we have turned Iraq into a place where terrorists can go and train and learn their craft. And the fear, the CIA report, was that some of these people will leave Iraq and go back to their homes or elsewhere around the world and use the techniques they've learned to advance their cause.
Don Gagne, you hang out at the White House every day. The poll results are coming in. A majority of Americans now have turned against this policy. The casualty reports are growing by the day. Commanders in the field say the insurgency is getting worse. The administration, do you sense that there's any kind of a panic, a sense that of a need to regroup as you show up at the White House every day?
Certainly not panic, certainly not outwardly, but there is very much a sense that they feel like they need to do more to get the message out, which is really a remarkable thing given how long this has been going on, how much the president has talked about it. But Scott McClellan, the press secretary, this morning in our first briefing of the day, the gaggle, it's not on camera, but he said Americans are seeing disturbing images on our TV screens. That's language that we've heard this administration use an awful lot. But then he went on to say, I think many of the American people haven't really heard our strategy for success and the way forward in Iraq. And he seems to be implying that the media is focusing on the disturbing images. But one does have to ask, if the American people haven't heard the strategy for success, why hasn't the administration done more to really get it out there in a specific and explicit way?
And we expect to hear more about that as Prime Minister Jafari and President Bush talk about that to reporters at the White House today. Prime Minister Jafari has just arrived at the White House. They'll meet with reporters in the East Room to talk about how that strategy is progressing. Lauren Jenkins, in terms of part of that strategy, of course, is the readiness of Iraqi troops to take over and defend the democracy that someday may be in place there. How's that going?
Well, from all reports, not that well. I think there's a very ambitious plan or strategy, a hope that the U.S. can train, quickly train a Iraqi military force and police force that would take over. But all the evidence, again, we're getting from the field is that it's going much slower than they thought. There are much fewer units trained than had been hoped for so far. And the units that have been trained have a very mixed record on the ground.
mixed record in part because of questions, I guess, and fears of infiltration. When you build an army this fast and a police force this fast, it's hard to know who's on whose side.
Well, there's infiltration, and there's also the issue of willingness to fight. They've had whole units that have gone in or refused to go into battles with the Americans. There have been some units that have fought with Americans, but some have actually just turned and refused to fight.
In terms of political support in this country, Don Gagne, what's going on at the White House with regard to the growing number of Republicans who are now calling for a deadline and an end to the U.S. military involvement?
That is certainly a concern. They are used to hearing that from Democrats, and they're seeing Democrats put together a more unified voice on this. But when key Republicans start talking about a timeline, that really does force the president to step up. And we will likely hear again today at this press conference that there is really you just can't put a timeline on it, is what we'll hear from the president. One thing his press secretary has said in the past is the timeline basically tells insurgents when they'll have free rein. So it'll be interesting to see how they really do work with those members of their own party, some key members within their own party, on that issue as that pressure grows and as we look ahead to midterm elections in the U.S., you know, just a little over a year from now.
Lauren Jenkins, it's one thing to put a date on when you might withdraw, decide whether or not to do that, another to decide to define when it is you've won and when you can pull out. Is that clearly defined in this policy? Do we know, you know, how to declare a victory and when we could pull out?
I don't think so. I don't think anyone knows how you declare victory there. So far, as I say, the conditions are so unstable. The country is really not under anybody's control. It's controlled where the U.S. units go. They can control it. The minute they leave, the insurgents come back in. At this point, it's anybody's guess what it would take to be a victory.
Let's talk a little bit about the political developments in Iraq. You know, you could look at it two ways. It took a long time. They're certainly far behind their schedule in terms of implementing a new constitution. It took a long time to form a government. It took a long time to bring Sunnis into the government. But you could say, well, yeah, but we did it. It's a messy process. We're making progress. So the real question is this government in touch with the people?
Well, that's a real question. They clearly are in touch with some of the people that elected it. But the election itself was flawed. The whole community, the Sunnis, stayed out of it. So you have an imbalanced government not representing one of the three major communities there. And that's part of the problem, is how you get the Sunnis involved with the Shia and the Kurds into forming and cooperating in governing the country. And right now, there's no agreement.
Don Gagne, the president is going to give a speech next week to talk again about Iraq policy. Any sense of what we might hear then?
Well, they're billing it as a speech to the troops and to the American people. And the president is asking for primetime network coverage of that speech. Again, it will be at Fort Bragg. They say that the president is going to use that opportunity when Americans are paying attention and looking closely and watching the speech to lay out specifically how he envisions victory and how he envisions the way forward in Iraq. We're not getting any indication at this point what he might say new, what he might say different that we haven't heard over the past couple of years, really.
Right now, where reporters are waiting in the East Room of the White House for President Bush and Iraqi Prime Minister Ibrahim Jafari to talk about Iraq policy in advance of that speech, which would come, as you said, Don, at the one-year anniversary of sovereignty for Iraq. And reporters are waiting now in the East Room. Prime Minister Jafari has arrived at the White House. He's been here. Do you know, Don, what he did yesterday? He did arrive yesterday in the U.S.
Yes, he's had meetings with the National Security Advisor, Stephen Hadley, with Vice President Cheney, and with some others within the White House.
All right. Well, they both gentlemen now have arrived at the White House, Iraqi Prime Minister Ibrahim Jafari and President Bush.
Thank you very much. Mr. Prime Minister, I am honored to welcome you to the White House. As the leader of Iraq's first democratically elected government in more than 50 years, you are helping to lift your country from decades of fear and oppression. The Prime Minister is a great Iraqi patriot. He's a friend of liberty. He is a strong partner for peace and freedom. For more than two decades, he served the cause of Iraqi freedom in exile as a fierce opponent of Saddam Hussein's tyranny. Today, this medical doctor now serves his people as he works to build a new Iraq. I told the Prime Minister that the American people share his democratic vision for Iraq. I told him of our nation's deep and abiding respect for Islam, for the people of Iraq, and for the potential of the nation that now belongs to them. Today we meet at a critical moment in the history of this proud nation. In just a few days, we will mark the first anniversary of the return of Iraq to its people. In the years since then, the Iraqis can take credit from some extraordinary achievements in the face of tremendous challenge. 7 months after resuming sovereignty over their nation, the Iraqi people defied the car bombers and assassins to hold their first free elections in a half century. In April, the newly elected Transitional National Assembly formed a government and appointed Dr. Jafari as the Prime Minister. This month, after a spirited debate, the Iraqis reached an agreement to expand their constitutional drafting committee to include more Sunni Arabs, so that this important community also has a strong voice in shaping the future of their country. Prime Minister and I discussed the important work the Iraqis have before them in the months ahead. This work includes drafting a permanent constitution for a free Iraq, submitting it to the Iraqi people for approval, and then holding new elections to choose a constitutional government. These are monumental tasks. Yet at every step of the way so far, the Iraqi people have met their strategic objectives, and the terrorists have failed to stop them. I commend the Prime Minister and his fellow Iraqis for their hard work and courage. I'm confident the Iraqi people will continue to defy the skeptics as they assume greater responsibility for their security and build a new Iraq that represents their diversity. The way ahead is not going to be easy. The killings and roadside bombings that we see underscore that freedom in Iraq is opposed by a violent and ruthless enemy with no regard for human life. The enemy includes former members of Saddam Hussein's regime. The enemy includes criminal elements, and the enemy includes foreign terrorists. The terrorists are fighting in Iraq because they know a free Iraq in the heart of the Middle East will deal a severe blow to an ideology that lives on oppression and fear. By securing Iraqi democracy, we will make America and our friends and allies around the world safer. The enemy's goal is to drive us out of Iraq before the Iraqis have established a secure democratic government. They will not succeed. Our goal is clear: a democratic and peaceful Iraq that represents all Iraqis. Our troops will continue to train Iraqi security forces so these forces can defend their country and to protect their people from terror. And as Iraqis become more capable in defending their nation, our troops will eventually return home with the honor they have earned. As the Iraqi people stand up for their freedom, they know that the free world is now standing with them. Earlier this week, more than 80 countries and international organizations came together in Brussels to discuss how to help Iraq provide for its security and rebuild its country. And next month, donor countries will meet in Jordan to discuss Iraqi reconstruction. I appreciate Prime Minister Jafari's brave leadership. Prime Minister Jafari is a bold man. I've enjoyed my discussion with you, Mr. Prime Minister. He is a frank, open fellow who is willing to tell me what's on his mind. And what is on his mind is peace and security for the people of Iraq. And what is on his mind is a democratic future that is hopeful. I want to thank you for your courage. I want to thank you for your understanding about the nature of free societies. I want to thank you for helping Iraq become a beacon of freedom. Prime Minister Jafari's visit comes at an important time. I want to thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Shukran Jain, thank you very much. Thank you. Please welcome. I want to thank the United States people for their courage and commitment against terrorism and for the democracy in our country. I visited hospital in the past month in Turkey, Muthanna, and yesterday in Washington, D.C. There were Iraqis and Americans. They had suffered side by side in the war on a common enemy, terrorism. They were fighting for the security of Iraq, but also of Americans. This is not the time to fall back. We owe it to those who have made those sacrifices to continue towards the goals they fought. I see from up close what's happening in Iraq, and I know we are making steady and substantial progresses. People said Saddam would not fall, and he did. They say the election would not happen, and they did. They say the Constitution will not be written, but it will. And the political process is worth 1,000 tanks, including the Sunni Arabs, will further undermine the terrorists. They have joined the parliamentary committee and the government, and they will take part in the next elections.
Another time, I would like to thank and commend Mr. President for his hospitality and his receiving me here and for the subjects we discussed together. And also, he was frank and transparent, and he gave me very good feelings towards the people in Iraq. I would also like to thank the American people for standing beside the Iraqi people going through these difficult times. No doubt, our people will never forget those who stand beside Iraq, particularly at these terrible times. We do appreciate the assistance given by America during the present period of time in particular. There is a great achievement in Iraq. There is democracy in Iraq, and the people in Iraq defied terrorism, and they refused to accept any constitutional association. There is about 30% of women participating, and this is an example of democracy in Iraq and in the region, even in the whole world. There are six minister ladies in my government, and it is my intention to add one more woman to be deputy to the prime minister. In the new Iraq, there is progress for more than one aspect, even though against all the challenges we have, particularly insecurity, even though there is a lot of infiltration from the countries adjacent to Iraq, moving from inside Iraq itself, but there is a will in Iraq to secure security, and so the bombing in Iraq has been reduced a lot. And we are making great progress, and we depend on our security forces, multinational forces also who work with us, support us, but the responsibility in the front line is for the Iraqis, and everything is making progress quantitatively and qualitatively. We want to secure the love instead of hatred in our country, coexistence and cooperation in Iraq instead of cursing each other. The whole people of Iraq would like to continue the democracy in Iraq, and they will fight for achieving it. So many people said that democracy will never stand in Iraq, said that elections will never be held in Iraq, and they said also that the government will never be established in Iraq, and they said that there would be no constitution, but everything will be there, and the whole world will see that changes in Iraq happened because of the great will of the people of Iraq and the countries that are assisting us. We want fraternal relations with all the countries of the world and the adjacent countries, keeping our sovereignty against all infiltration from the borders of Iraq. We want the goodness for all countries of the world and wish you all the best for the American people. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr.
Prime Minister.
Thank you very much.
Now, as we'll ask a question, answer a question from the American side and then one from the Iraqi side. Thank you. We'll be there in a minute. And then we're to the side, in other words. I will start with Kelly O'Donnell.
Regarding the insurgency as being in its last throes. General Abizaid said there's been no significant change over the last 6 months. Your spokesman said you agreed with the vice president's assessment. Can you help the American people understand these two different views that are coming forward, one from the administration, one from top commanders, when your spokesman tells us every day you get your information directly from those top commanders?
I do get briefed by our top commanders, as does the vice president. As a matter of fact, about 2 hours ago, General Abizaid briefed the vice president and myself and the secretary of defense about what is taking place on the ground. And there's no question there's an enemy that still wants to shake our will and get us to leave. And they're willing to do so, use any means necessary. They try to kill, and they do kill innocent Iraqi people, women and children, because they know that the carnage that they wreak will be on TV, and they know that it bothers people to see death, and it does. It bothers me. It bothers American citizens. It bothers Iraqis. They're trying to shake our will. That's what they're trying to do. And so, of course, we understand the nature of that enemy. We also understand that there is reason to be optimistic about what's taking place. The very same commanders that say that these folks are terrible killers are also reminding us that we're making good progress. On the one hand, you just heard the Prime Minister talk about a new democracy. You know, remember the killers tried to intimidate everybody so that they wouldn't vote. That was their tactic. If you look back at the history of our involvement in Iraq, there was a lot of bombings and killings prior to the elections. What they were trying to do is say, let's shake the will of not only the Americans, but the Iraqi citizens. But nevertheless, the Iraqi citizens wouldn't have their will shaken. So we're optimistic. We're optimistic that more and more Iraqi troops are becoming better trained to fight the terrorists. We're optimistic about the constitutional process. There is a political track that's moving forward in parallel with a security track. No question about it's difficult. I mean, we hear it every day, of course. So do you. You report it every day. It's tough work, and it's hard. The hardest part of my job is to comfort the family members who've lost a loved one, which I intend to do when I go down to North Carolina on Tuesday. But nevertheless, progress is being made, and the defeat of the enemy, and they will be defeated, will be accelerated by the progress on the ground in Iraq, that the establishment of a democratic state that listens to the hopes and aspirations of all the people in Iraq will lead to the defeat of this enemy. And so that's what this administration believes, and we firmly believe it is going to happen. Now, would you like to call on somebody from the Iraq press?
Yes.
Who would you like to call on?
Speak.
You better pick one.
Najm Rubai.
Najm Rubai from Iraq Radio. My first question is, Mr. Bush, we heard here that there are members of the Congress and the Senate. They are asking for a schedule for the withdrawing your troops from Iraq. Have you discussed this with the government of Iraq, or will it be left to the government to decide? Mr. Jafari, It was said in the streets of Iraq that the administration of America is pressurizing your government through the visit of Mr. Rice in Iraq. Is there a reaction to that with President Bush?
Well, thank you. You've picked up a good American trick, which is to ask two questions. Congratulations. There are not going to be any timetables. I mean, I've told this to the Prime Minister. We are there to complete a mission, and it's an important mission. A democratic Iraq is in the interest of the United States of America, and it's in the interest of laying the foundation for peace. And if that's the mission, then why would you say to the enemy, you know, here's the timetable, just go ahead and wait us out? It doesn't make any sense to have a timetable. You know, if you give a timetable, you're conceding too much to the enemy. This is an enemy that will be defeated. And it's just, I'm not exactly sure who made that proposition. But I would, you don't have to worry, Mr. Prime Minister, about timetables. And we want to work with you to continue to build up the Iraqi forces. See, success will happen in Iraq when the political process moves forward like it is. I remind you all, maybe 4 months ago, at the beginning of the winter, there was a lot of people here in the country that never thought the elections would go forward. They thought the enemy had the upper hand because of the death and destruction that we saw on our TV screens. They said, well, can't possibly be elections. The Iraqi people don't want to be free. And, you know, these killers are going to stop the elections. And sure enough, over 8 million people voted because they do want to be free. And so success will occur as this political process continues to move forward. And we spent time talking about making sure that Sunnis were a part of the process. And I appreciate the Prime Minister's attitude. We made sure we talked about making sure that, you know, people's points of view are represented. Making sure that we stayed on the only timetable that I think is going to, that I know is out there, is the timetable that says let's have the Constitution written by a certain date, and let's have it ratified by a certain date, and let's have the election by a certain date. That's the timetable. And we're going to stay on that timetable. And it's important for the Iraqi people to know we are. And the second track is to have Iraqis take the fight to the enemy. And we're slowly but surely getting this training completed. And so we spent time today not only hearing about the conditions on the ground and the nature of the enemy from General Zabizade and General Casey, but we also talked about progress in the training mission. And we are making good progress when it comes to training Iraqis. One of the interesting statistics as to whether or not the Iraqis want to join the fight is whether or not they're able to recruit Iraqis to join the army. And recruitment's high. In other words, Iraqis do want to be a part of the process. And so part of the coalition's job is to give these Iraqi units the training necessary to be able to fight the terrorists. That's our strategy. And it is working, and it's going to work for the good of the country. Now, he asked you a question, and it's very intelligent.
As for the second question on the visit of Ms. Rice, Condoleezza Rice, to Iraq, the general impression of that visit was a general review for the situation there. It was a time for us so that gave us support at Bruxelles, and I think they played a great role, that the greater opportunity for the Iraqis as a big party. And as for the program and the ministers who attended, they all spoke in the interest of Iraq, and we thanked her very much for the efforts she made. And I spoke about the preparation for her and what she can present us of services to Iraq. And I believe she played a great role and will play a great role in Bruxelles. And I hope the recommendations will reflect on the donor countries so that we get the interest to the Iraqi people, particularly for the services. Thank you.
Declining public support for the mission in Iraq and the lack of progress on some of your domestic priorities has prompted suggestions that that you're in something of a second-term slump. Do you worry?
A quagmire, perhaps.
You can choose the word, sir. Do you worry at all about losing some of your ability to drive the agenda both internationally and domestically? And, Mr. Prime Minister, if I may, does the decline in American support for the mission in Iraq have any impact on your government and the people of your country?
No, I appreciate that. Look, this is a time of testing, and it's a critical time. We're asking Congress to take on some big tasks domestically. You know, I fully understood when I went into the Social Security debate that there would be a lot of people that wished we hadn't brought it up. I knew that. I mean, after all, there are some who in Congress that would rather not take on the tough issue. Maybe they're afraid if you take on a tough issue, it'll make it harder to get reelected. And so I'm not surprised that there is a kind of a reaction, the do-nothing reaction in Congress towards Social Security, and I'm not surprised the American people are saying, I wonder why nothing's getting done. You know, they see a problem, and they're wondering why people won't step up and solve the problem. So I'm not surprised about people are balking at doing big things. I do think we'll get an energy bill that'll be good and show the American people finally we're willing to put a energy strategy in law that'll help us conserve more and diversify away from hydrocarbons and develop technologies that will enable us to burn coal cleanly, for example. Overseas, the idea of helping a country that had been devastated by a tyrant become a democracy is also a difficult chore, and it's hard work, particularly since there's an enemy that is willing to use suicide bombers to kill. It's hard to stop suicide bombers, and it's hard to stop these people that are, in many cases are being smuggled into Iraq from outside Iraq. It's hard to stop them, and yet they're able to do incredible damage. They're damaging not only, they're obviously killing Americans, but they're killing a lot more Iraqis. And their whole attempt is to frighten the people of both our countries. That's what they're trying to do. In other words, they figure if they can shake our will and, affect public opinion, then politicians will give up on the mission. I'm not giving up on the mission. We're doing the right thing, which is to set the foundation for peace and freedom. And I understand why the Al-Qaeda network, for example, is so terrified about democracy. Because democracy is the opposite of what they believe. Their ideology is one of oppression and hate. Democracy is one that lifts up people and is based upon hope. I think I said at this press conference here in the East Room, it's like following polls are like a dog chasing his tail. I'm not sure how that translates, but my job is to set an agenda and to lead toward that agenda. And we're laying the foundation for peace around the world. Iraq is a part of the agenda. There's going to be there were elections in Lebanon. We hope Egypt has free and open elections. My dream is that there be a Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Iraq. I noticed our former ambassador to Afghanistan is with us, who's now going to be the ambassador to Iraq. Afghanistan is a hopeful story. Still difficult, because again, there are terrorists there associated with this, the likes of are a part of the Al-Qaeda network that is interested in stopping the advance of democracy, because democracy will be a part of their defeat and demise.
Thank you very much.
شكرا جزيلا. Thank you.
As for the question on the reduction of support, Iraqi people had a specific request, which is toppling down Saddam Hussein for reasons relating to their dignity and their policy, their politics. And after Saddam Hussein was removed, through the different efforts of international efforts and Iraqis, this was achieved. Right now, we have another danger, which is terrorism, which is against not only the Iraqi people but all the world of the country of the world, and at any time doesn't have any particular land, but it works everywhere. Geography of terrorism is the human beings themselves, and those people who are doing it are the enemies of humanity. Once they do it in Washington, once in Spain, once in Iraq. So fighting terrorism and limiting their impact, and in order to keep the human dignity and civilization, requires that we all act together. It's not only the duty of Iraqi people, but other countries as well. As you know, Iraq is rich in oil, in water, in cultivation, and strategy, and terrorism. And also, but because of the exceptional circumstances of Iraq, now it has become a poor country. So we have to have the impact and the support from other countries. The success of our Iraqi people is your own success. The people of Iraq is civilized and look forward to support from all other countries of the world. You have given us something more than money. You have given us a lot of your sons, your children that were killed beside our own children in Iraq. Of course, this is more precious than any other kind of support we receive. You have to be proud before your own people that you presented us for the maintenance of democracy in Iraq and to remove the dictatorship. We do not forget those who stood beside us at hard times, and they are decided to go forward. And there is a lot of difference between 1 month and another, between 1 week and another. Iraqi people are insistent on going along the path of their economy and their security. But we do need the help of other countries who help us to stand beside us. Thank you.
Final question, Mr. Prime Minister.
Mr. Prime Minister, I am a presenter on radio in Iraq. My question is for you. For more than 2 years, we started a change in Iraq, but the process of building is very slow. There are secure cities in Iraq, Samawa, Kurdistan. When will you begin the reconstruction in Iraq? When do we begin to establish the first basis of reconstruction? And you know that if you started reconstruction in Iraq, it will mean that young people will have something to do and they will leave terrorist activities. So the question is for Mr. Prime Minister. There